Come tonight to a very important chapter, and it's the 12th, chapter 12, and I'll read verses 1 through 8, maybe verse 9, in your hearing this evening. The first 11 chapters of the book of Genesis covers about 2,000 years. The next 39 chapters covers the life of Abraham and his descendants. That's why it is such an important thing that we know what Genesis says. It is the foundation of all that we are, all that we believe. It's where we came from, it's who we are, and it is where we are headed. The first 11 chapters end with the Tower of Babel and God scattering the nations and confusing the languages. But every time judgment falls, God offers mercy. And mercy comes in the call of Abraham as God says, though I have scattered the nations and I have confused the languages, I am about to build a nation that will be the apple of my eye and of whom the generations will know that the seed will come that dies on a cross and is buried in a borrowed tomb, and gloriously comes forth from the grave. So let's read together chapter 12, verse 1 and following. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation, and I'll bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan. When they came to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to a place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. And at that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give you this land. So he built there an altar to the Lord, who had appeared to him. And from there he moved to the hill country on the east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on, still going toward the Negev, or the wilderness. If you take this passage in just a simple format, you will discover these three things. There is a promise upon which Abraham rested. There's a tent in which he resided. And there is an altar that he retreated to. And that's the little outline that I have given to you, so let me fill in a few blanks. The promise on which he rested. God calls Abram from the Ur of the Chaldees, Mesopotamia, to travel hundreds of miles upward and onward until he comes to the land of Canaan or Palestine. If you go back to chapter 11 and begin in verse 27 and follow, you see Abram's family. Let's read that. These are the generations of Terah. Terah fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran fathered Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his kindred in the Ur of the Chaldees. And Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Now Sarai was barren. She had no child. Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth together from the Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. So it gives you a little bit about this man's past and his following or obeying the call of the Lord. His family history. Joshua tells us that the Ur of the Chaldees was a place where false gods were worshipped. In fact, we already would know that just from the location and from the fact that Jehovah, the God of Israel, has not yet been internationally and universally known. So it was that Abram and Sarai and the family that came with them came from a country of idolatry where false gods were worshipped. Here's what Joshua says. They served other gods, not the God of glory, but they served other gods. So it is that when Abram left the Ur of the Chaldees, he left behind idolatry. He left behind the worship of other gods. And he came to a place where he received, accepted, trusted in, and believed and followed after the God of glory, Jehovah Jireh, the God who hears and provides and answers our prayers. So he moved from idolatry to what we commonly call Christianity, though he knew so very little about God and the promises and the pledges of God. In fact, many of the promises of God and many of the pledges that God made began with a conversation that he had with Abram, who is later to be named Abraham, and Sarai, who is later just to be known as Sarah, who is to give birth to Isaac, and following that, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and beyond until we come to the lineage of Jesus Christ. So we could say something about Abram in that in leaving the Ur of the Chaldees and traveling to Canaan, he was a converted man. Now, I don't think that means that he knew everything about salvation that you and I may know tonight, nor do I think that he knew everything about the purpose and plan of God. And I think that he finds out on several occasions how faithful God is and how firm his promise and plan is. But he left with obedience in his mind. Hebrews says the following: he went out not knowing where he was going. But the conclusion of Hebrews is, while he went out not knowing where he was going, he knew who he was following. And so in obedience to God, we see Abram leaving the Ur of the Chaldees and going out. He is a converted man. He is a called man. If you'll read verse 1, it literally says, "You go and I will show." That's what God is saying. If you will be faithful to go, God says, I will be faithful to show. Go from your country, your kindred, your father's house to the land that I will show you. You'd be surprised how true that principle really is. When we are faithful to go, God is faithful to show. When we are faithful to follow him in obedience, he is faithful to bless us. In fact, he gives indication here that those who follow him and follow his will for their lives, he blesses, and those who reject that, he literally curses. So God said, go, and I'll show. And that works thousands of years later as we sit in this place tonight. When God says, go, you say, I'll go, and God says, I'll show. Let me give you something out of my history that taught me a real lesson. I think I must have been 6 or 7. And Dad said, do you want to go with me? And I made the mistake of saying, well, where are we going? And he said, never mind. Got in the truck and left. I didn't understand that. And when he came back, I said, why did you not take me? He said, oh, I'll take you when where we're going doesn't matter, when who you're going with is what matters. Taught me a lesson. Ought to teach you and I a spiritual lesson tonight. The question is not where are we going, the question is who are we going with. And when God says, let's go, we should say, you just show me the way and I will go with you. It's not about where we're going. He went out not knowing where. It is more about who we are going with. So he's a called man. He begins to yield to the call of God. And by the way, as far as we can tell, this is the first ministry call that God has placed upon someone. These first 11 chapters are the history of the world as it began, as it exploded, as it was destroyed, and Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord, and God blessed Noah. But this is a man who is being called away from who he was, what he was, and where he was to go to a new place. But it was not the last time God called someone to do that. In fact, God's still calling people to do that tonight, to leave where you are, to quit being who you are, and to go into a place oftentimes where you don't know what you will be, and you don't know who you will be, but you know who you're going with, and that makes all the difference in the world. I think then we can say about him, not only is he a converted man and a called man, he's a committed man. I think you have to really look at what he did. Hundreds of miles away. Now here's the equation. Hundreds of miles away. I want you to leave your gods. I want you to leave your friends. I want you to leave your nativity, the place of your birth. I want you to leave behind everything familiar to you, everything meaningful to you, everything you have ever known, and I want you to get up and go to a land that I will describe to you, define for you, and show you as you travel. And I've thought about that quite often. In all of the years of my ministry, I've been contacted by a few churches here and there that would say, would you come in view of a call and preach for us? And if we like you and you like us and God's in all of that, you'd have to move to where we were. But every time I have ever received that kind of call, I knew where I was, and I knew where I'd be going. And I knew that what I was doing where I was is the same thing I'd be doing where I was going. I had a marked advantage over Abraham. Abraham is leaving behind everything and everyone except a select few in his family, and he's going to a place where he's never been and knows nothing at all about, and he's following a God that he's just met. That's commitment. That's commitment in the highest caliber and in the greatest respect. Number two, I want you to see the tent in which he resided. When you look at verse 6 and following, here's what you read. He passed through the land at a place called Shechem to the oak of Moreh, and at that time the Canaanites were in the land. That's the enemy. And the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I'll give you this land. So there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. Abraham is a wanderer. He's a traveler. He is not going to a particular location. In fact, the book of Hebrews says he goes out not knowing where he is going. But even after he arrives, he does not drive down a stake and says, this is where I will stay. The whole land of Canaan lay before him. The book of Hebrews chapter 11, let me read a few verses to you. It is an easy asset that he is accomplishing. It's an easy thing that he's going to do. Really? Listen to this. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he had to live in the land of promise, like it was a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that had foundations whose designer and builder is God. Then it talks about his wife. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive even when she was past the age, since she was considered him faithful who had promised. And therefore, from one man and him as good as dead were born descendants as many as the stars of the heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. You think that was an easy move on his part? Living in tents. He was a wealthy man. He didn't live in a tent in the Ur of the Chaldees. He left his home, a permanent residence, and he began to travel. and he lived in a tent, and he moved from place to place as the Spirit of God moved upon him. But here's something that we need to consider tonight. He lived in a temporary place, but Hebrews says he had other ideas. He was looking for a city whose builder and maker was God. He had already begun to understand that this world is not our home, we're just passing through. That our treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. That the angels beckon us to heaven's open door, so I don't feel at home in this world anymore. He was saying about himself, a tent here, but a tabernacle over there. A place here that is not permanent, but a city whose builder and maker is God. And permanent's not the right word. Eternal is the best word to describe what was on his heart and what was on his mind. His earthly residence was going to be called Canaan, but he was looking for a place called 7777 Hallelujah Avenue in the city of glory. He was not going to be content with Canaan. He was not going to be content with a tent. He'd already heard in his heart, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. No, Jesus hadn't said it, and the scripture hadn't yet been written, but it was God who imparted to this man a reason and a reward to walk in obedience. It is God who imparts to you tonight and to me a reason and a reward when we walk in obedience. So there's the promise upon which he rested. If you'll go, I'll show you a land. There's the tent in which he resided, a wanderer, a pilgrim, just passing through. And then here's the altar to which he retreated. Verse 7 and following says this, the Lord appeared to him, to your offspring I'll give you this land. So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him, and from there he moved to the hill country on the east of Bethel, pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. Other passages tell us a little bit more about that conversation. God came to Abram, and he said, Abram, I want to walk with you along the seashore. Abram said, fine, let's walk. He stopped and he said, Abraham, would you count the granules of sand on this seashore? And Abram said, impossible, Lord. Millions, millions upon millions, a number that no man can count, an innumerable amount of sand on the sea. And God said, and that is my commitment to you. That is my covenant with you. The people that come after you will be more numerous than the granules of sand on the seashore. Well, they communed for the rest of the day, and the conversation began like this when evening fell. Abram, would you take just a moment and count all the stars? He must have looked up and said, Lord, I thought we settled that this morning. I can't count the granules of sand on the seashore, and I have no earthly idea how many stars are in your heavens. There is no way I could count that innumerable number of stars. And God said, I just wanted to be able to repeat my covenant. Just like you couldn't count the granules of sand on the seashore, and just like you cannot count the stars that are in the heavens, I promise you, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and when you get to the book of Matthew, the lineage will have grown and grown and grown, and out of that lineage there will be a Christ born who is Messiah, and on and on and on, the people that will call me Yahweh, Almighty God, and Jehovah will be greater in number than the sand of the sea and the stars of the heaven. And even though he was not yet a Baptist, I bet you he shouted right then and there. What a covenant Well, he's a God of covenants. Noah, I won't destroy the earth anymore with a flood. And let me tell you, that was a tremendous covenant. But this covenant, out of the lineage that you shall bear in your loins as a man past childbearing stages, with a woman past childbearing stages, with that lineage, I'll bring forth the Son of God, who will be the Savior of the world. And so I have no question why he then found a place to build an altar. That kind of God, my God, your God, that kind of God deserves to be worshiped. That kind of God deserves to be praised. That kind of God deserves to be trusted. That kind of God deserves to be followed by faith. That's a faithful God. That's a powerful God. That's a mighty God. That's a holy God. That's a pure God. That's a God who loves you and a God who's going to take care of you. That's a covenant God. And that kind of God deserves to be honored and glorified, exalted, and praised. And so he came to a place of reverence where he met God. Now I want you to get this. Just a few more sentences, but I want you to get this. He didn't stay there. He was a pilgrim. He was a wanderer. But where he built the altar, he named it Bethel. And repeatedly, throughout the next chapters of Genesis, you will find Abraham and those who came after him returning to Bethel. And here's the reason. Once you have met God, you will always return to God. Once you have met him, you will want to meet him again and again. Once relationship has been birthed, you will want fellowship to continue. Once you have met God and he is, you will want to meet him again and again, so that you can become what he is. And I want to close tonight by telling you that in my heart of hearts, I need an altar. I need a Bethel. I need a place to go back to. And thank God I have it. The house has been torn down. It's the parking lot of a Walmart. But if the house were standing, I could take you to the 12-inch square on the floor of the little front bedroom where I fell out of my bed onto my knees and said, "Oh God, I don't want to go to hell. I want to go to heaven. I believe you. I want to trust you. And I want to commit my life to you." And I was just 7 years old. And I was as saved that night as I am tonight. And I have been back to my Bethel, not the square on the floor, not the place on the parking lot, not the house that's been borne down, but I have been back to the place where I made a promise to God and he made a promise to me. And I have returned to that place more times than I could possibly count tonight. And every time I've gone back, he was there. He's gone nowhere. He's never forsaken me. He's never left me. He's always kept his word. He's always kept his promise. He's always kept his covenant. He's a God who's going nowhere, except he's going to be everywhere you need him to be when you follow after him. I need an altar, because sometimes my heart gets cold. I need an altar because sometimes my feet get dirty. I need an altar because sometimes my heart gets broken. I need an altar because sometimes my friends turn their back on me. I need an altar because sometimes Satan's attack is ferocious and the demons of hell seem to be turned loose against us. I need an altar because the days grow long and I become weary, and my strength becomes weakness. I need an altar because sometimes my life even loses its worth. And I found a place to go when I'm sick. It's called a doctor's office. And I found a place to go when I'm tired, and it's called a vacation. And I found a place to go when my muscles need to be stretched, and it's called a gym. And I found a place to go when I need to be counseled with. It's a psychologist or a pastor friend. And I found a place to go when I just need some help. And I found a place to go when I just need to be loved. It's my home. But oh, I need an altar. I need a place to go when there's no place to go. Do you get that? I need a place to go when if I don't get there, I'm going to dry up and wither away. I'm going to fall down and fade into insignificance. I need a place to go when the news is bad. I need a place to go when the clouds are gathering. I need a place to go when the storm comes. I need a place to go, and I want to recommend to you tonight, Bethel. It's the house of God, and you can go there in a moment's time by simply whispering a prayer. Abraham was a man who rested on God's promises. He abided in a tent because he was a wanderer. But Abraham was the man that he was because he had an altar that he could go back to and find whatever he needed in a storm-tossed life. And stick with us for the next several weeks, because Abraham is going to meet all kinds of opposition and enemy. And that's why I said to you earlier tonight, this is not the last time we're going to hear about Bethel. He returns over and over and over again. And you're even going to hear about Bethel when Isaac comes along and when Jacob follows after him. The place that daddy went, son goes. The place that grandfather went, grandson goes. The place of blessing. Let's stand together. As Mike and I are here in the altar, you might want this place tonight to be a spiritual Bethel for you. You might want to just come and pray. Somebody might want to come and remember God's call upon your life. Somebody that feels like you're just a wanderer, you're a pilgrim, you can't really find a place to get anchored. You might want to come tonight and say, I'm living in a tent, but I'm looking for a city whose builder and maker is God. And maybe you might want to come tonight and say, there was a time when I remember a relationship, but I've gotten cold, I've gotten indifferent. I want to come back and I want to find true fellowship. So the altar's your Bethel tonight, and if God speaks to your heart, we'd invite you to come.